You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing as we literally and figuratively have a little bit of something for everybody on the program today. We're going to send it to Las Vegas. Ted Stefanski is going to join us. And I believe Ted has one or two more appearances. I think he might join us next week before Teddy disappears for a month and a half as he goes into hibernation to prepare for the upcoming football season. We'll talk basketball and baseball, maybe a little football with Ted Stefanski. And, of course, Teddy went to the University of Michigan, as did the man who will join us following Ted Stefanski. When I said we got something for everybody on the program today, We've got Big Papa Pump on the program today. Scott Steiner, hail to the victor, Wolverine. An All-American wrestler with the Michigan Wolverines in the mid-80s. And, of course, a multiple champion, world champion in the squared circle. So we break it down with Scott Steiner now of Impact Wrestling. I'm fired up. I'm fired up and I'm actually scared. A little bit put off as well. I've interviewed literally thousands of people over the years. There's only a few people that have made me nervous. And I don't get nervous like, ooh, I'm interviewing some big name. Like Dick Butkus made me a little bit nervous just because it's Dick Butkus. Mike Ditka scared the crap out of me because it's Mike Ditka. You know? But I actually got drunk with Mike Ditka. So I know Iron Mike, actually. I'm name dropping. Me and Mike are tight. No, we're not tight. I did get drunk with him, though. So there's a few dudes. Normally, like the real legend, badass dudes that I know will just want to punch me in the face. And, you know, Scott Steiner, he's punched a lot of people in the face. And whenever you have a wrestler on the program, people always want, like, the controversial feud stories. And, you know, they want to get crazy and stuff. Except if you look at Steiner's bio, the guy hates everybody. He's in a million freaking feuds. I don't even know where to start with this guy. And I believe he once caused a plane to get landed because he was unruly on it. Which is way cool. You know, way cool. I've come close to doing that a couple of times, but I've chilled out since there's bigger ramifications. In the old days, you could really mouth off on a plane, get hammered, walk around. You could do a lot of stupid things on a plane. Not anymore. All right, Paul Bovey, he's going to join us. We'll talk about tonight's Cavaliers and Celtics matchup. Is it the final game of the year for the Boston Celtics? It probably is, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a blowout. So we'll break it down with Paul Bovey. We've got Game 7, NHL. I wonder who Gary Bettman's pulling for tonight. Let's see. You know, the American Pittsburgh Penguins with Sidney Crosby, who we have on TV on a weekly basis, or the Ottawa Senators that aren't even selling out their games. You know, the lowest rated Stanley Cup Finals in the last 10 years involved the Ottawa Senators, actually. They're rating killers. So you know what? Please. Please, hockey gods. And you know, I like Sidney Crosby. I'm a Crosby fan. Everyone seems to hate Crosby. Crosby's popular in Pittsburgh. People in Canada hate Crosby. The only time they like him is when he saves their sorry asses in the Olympics and scores big goals for them. I'm a Crosby fan. I love Sidney Crosby. Great player. Great guy. Class act. But I'm pulling for the Ottawa Senators tonight. Let's shake it up a little bit, man. If we have Ottawa and Nashville, it'll be the first time ever that one of these two teams win a Stanley Cup, and that would be pretty cool. So we got a ton of stuff to get to on the program. We got a ton of picks to get to on the program. We spent a lot of time this week praising the National Football League as the National Football League has relaxed its excessive touchdown celebration penalties. And, you know, rightfully so, we gave credit to the National Football League for this. But if you remember, and this was just 2 days ago, I said, well, we're going to praise Goodell right now. We're going to say, finally, the NFL got something right, but I'm sure we'll be ripping him in the near future again. Well, here we are 48 hours later. Yesterday, we ripped on Marvin Lewis, rightfully so, for being the clown that he is and a hypocrite that he is. Marvin Lewis, not down with the celebrating. Same dude that had Terrell Owens, Ocho Cinco. Cincinnati Bengals have Icky Woods. You just drafted a player to punch a chick in the face. You got Pac-Man Jones on your team. And you got Vontaze Burfict on your team. And you're worrying about the influence of celebrations on the youngsters of America. Clown! All right, you know who else is a clown? Roger Goodell. We all just assumed And you know, this is what happens when you assume, man. You're making an ass out of you and me. Not the first time I'll make an ass out of myself. But it wasn't in the rules, man. They specifically said, no twerking. I would twerk right now, but you don't want to see that. And I don't want to see an NFL player twerk. As I stated earlier in the week, the only person that should be twerking on the NFL field is a cheerleader. Nothing of sexual nature. We all agree. Good job. We all agree. None of us want to see any players hump anything or moon anything. All right. No guns or violent themes. Yeah, it's a little bit. I don't mind, you know, an old-fashioned, bam, bam, Dallas Cowboy type stuff. But whatever. No guns. You know what? The Washington Wizards used to be called the Washington Bullets. They changed the name. Last time I checked, people didn't stop getting shot in Washington, D.C. because you changed the name. You know? Oh, yeah, we can't have the name. What, people are, the kid shot the guy because of the name of the basketball team. But nevertheless, I digress. So, they're saying no dunking. Took them a couple of days, though, to come out with this. They just announced this. Oh, yeah, by the way, no dunking. And they haven't come out with an official reasoning why, but sources close to the league say it's a delay of game. You can still get flagged for a delay of game. So I don't really understand how you're going to allow players to dance and do choreographed team-type synchronized celebrations. You're allowed to do snow angels. Rob Gronkowski basically used to spike the ball. Like, I'm surprised he didn't put it 6 feet under. He spiked it so hard. So is that delay game when a ball bounces? But somehow, dunking a basketball over the goalpost, that's somehow a delay of game. Now, I think it happened freaking once. Remember, I think once Jimmy Graham, once the goalpost tilted because of Jimmy Graham. So what? I'm going to tell you, man, if Roger Goodell, this dude's so freaking thick and antiquated, if Roger Goodell was the commissioner of the NBA, they wouldn't be allowed to dunk. Nah, we don't like the showboating aspect of it. And you might break the backboard. Yeah, every once in a while, a backboard might get broken. But can you imagine? It's comical to see how slow the National Football League is to step into the future. And they take a step forward, and then they take like three steps back. The most entertaining thing would be to see a guy like Odell Beckham or a Sammy Watkins. No, not Watkins. He'd hurt himself trying to dunk a football. Odell Beckham dunking a football. But dunking is not allowed. So just as we were about to give the National Football League a little bit of credit, once again, they remind us why the NFL stands for No Fun League. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Moretz. We got a big show lined up for you. Ted Savransky, Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump, and Paul Bovey join us on the program today. A lot of stuff to get to. I'm fired up, man. We spoke to Mark Lawrence yesterday. We did some Heisman Trophy odd future talk. And it was great stuff talking college football. There's a lot of work to be done. And for me, pretty much, I'm waiting officially like for the calendar. Starting June, and for all the viewers as well, and people listening to the simulcast on the radio side of things, starting in June, let's say June 1 is next Thursday, the NBA Finals start. So let's say June 5th, the Monday when we return, we're going to begin breaking down college football, NFL football, because, it's a little early for that, isn't it? No, it isn't. How many line teams are there in college football right now? It's like 124, 125 of them, man. 32 NFL teams, 124, 126 college football teams. We wouldn't even have enough if we broke down every game, every team. We wouldn't even have enough time before the season starts. So starting June 5th, football, football, football. Let's bring in Ted Safransky right now. What's up, Teddy?
Why are you waiting until June, man? Is it before Memorial Day?
No, I'm talking deep into football. Deep.
Yeah.
Team by team previews, win totals.
Yeah. I started doing that for the NFL on my show this past week because you know how it is. You know, basketball's a driver, baseball's a driver, but nothing drives viewers like football. Everyone wants football content, man.
Yeah, and at this point as well, I mean, you have your hardcore baseball geeks that are into baseball. The casual fan will pay attention down the stretch and then come playoffs. NHL, NHL, I find each market sort of taps out as their team gets eliminated. It's that time of the year. And the NBA playoffs, everyone's been hating them so much. People look forward to the finals, but I think there's going to be an eager anticipation for football this year. Because in past years, you know, we had soccer, we had World Cups, we had Olympics. There was always sort of something to bridge, you know, the summer to the NFL. This year, there's a ton of MMA, but nevertheless, we've got the Cavs and the Celtics on the board right now tonight, Teddy. Cavaliers are laying at 10. The total is 216.5. Celtics' backs are obviously against the wall. What do they have left in the tank?
Well, you know, I would expect Boston to show up tonight. Will showing up be enough is the real question about that team. Because, look, I mean, the Celtics in Game 4, there were a lot of things to like about what Boston did in that contest. And yet, when all said and done, if you have a Celtics ticket in your pocket plus all the points, you're still sweating the final couple of minutes. And I got a great quote from Brad Stevens. I'm just looking for right here real quick because it's like a must-read quote because it's talking about basically how the Celtics, you know, they played as well as they could play and there's not a lot more that they have in the tank. And, of course, now that I need it, I can't find the quote. And I had it all set up. You can't even imagine.
Normally I would know this one. I'm a big here quote is, guy as here. Well. You got
all
it?
Right. Brad Stevens, quote. Kyrie Irving and LeBron James would be the two answers. They were unbelievable. Irving was incredible at the end of the third, and then obviously LeBron had all those baskets in the fourth. I thought we played, you know, as well as we've played maybe the entire playoffs in the first half. We were really good defensively, but that's what great teams do. They make it really hard on you. That quote stood out like a sore thumb to me. When your coach is saying, you just played the best half of basketball you've had in the entire postseason, and oh, by the way, you lost that game by double digits? That's a concern. And, of course, the fact that they were leading by margin, and then LeBron picks up his fourth foul, Kyrie takes over, and the Celtics' interior defense, you know, was pretty ugly in that contest. And that's been a matchup problem for Boston throughout the course of the series. The only game they won was the one that Cleveland stopped taking the ball to the basket and stopped dominating in the paint. But Game 4, you know, the Cavs were plus 24 in points in the paint. They were plus 8 on the glass for the series. Cleveland's grabbed about 54.5% of available rebounds. I mean, they have been the better interior team. So Boston's got a chance when Marcus Smart goes nuts and hits 7 three-pointers, you know. But when Marcus Smart shoots 1 of 9 from the floor like he did in Game 4, Celtics aren't going anywhere. I still not convinced in the slightest that Boston has any idea how to defend Cleveland. Not an easy team to defend. So while you say, yeah, the Celtics are going to fight, Boston's hung tough, I don't trust them. And I know that they've had more than their fair share of ugly showings at home. Remember the first two games against the Bulls, obviously the first two games in this series, and all the talk is, well, we got to do better for the fans, yada, yada. You know, does that matter? Does the effort there when they're down 12 in the fourth quarter and this team's got to focus and make shots in order to cover a point spread? I worry about that on the Celtics side.
It comes down to how much heart Boston actually has, how much resiliency they want to show, how much respect they have for their fans. But they showed something. And, you know, we saw going into Game 3, the sky was falling. They had lost the first two games by an average of 28 points on their home court. It's a weird series, too, with the fact that Cleveland was on the road. The point spreads have been weird. It's a difficult series to handicap. But then Boston, and I saw a tweet, a picture of Boston coming out before the game. Oh, their shoulders were all low. They looked terrible. The body language during the pregame of Game 3 was awful. But then the reality set in. Oh, yeah, we're a better team without Isaiah Thomas on the court. So, you know, they showed a lot. And I do buy into this. I think it does bother them. You and I both know that there's not a guy in the Celtics room right now that thinks they're going to win the next three games. But I think it does bother them. They got smoked on their home court in the first two games. You know, the Boston crowd is great. They're going to show up. You know, what happens to me, Teddy, is it's sort of a close game. And then Cleveland pulls away. But do they win by 8 or they win by 12 or 14? I don't know. I'm going to take a shot with Boston tonight.
I mean, I wouldn't expect the Celtics to come out flat. by any stretch of the imagination. The problem is I've seen too many of those performances from Boston this postseason at home. You know, it didn't happen once or twice. I mean, we're talking about this is a trend for the Boston Celtics. Boston over the course of the regular season this year and last year, both better point spread team by margin on the highway than they were playing at TD Garden. Of course, this is a very different situation where they're double-digit home dogs, which they're not during the regular season in any of these contests. And from a point spread perspective, of course, there's all kinds of value on the Celtics here. You know, I mean, this is not a point spread range where we're used to seeing Boston, but I do worry about that mentality. And if the Cavs hit a couple of shots and then hit a couple of more, as Cleveland's capable of doing, I worry about the Celtics' ability to get up off the mat and fight for a full 48 minutes.
I got to believe, Teddy, that this is the first time in the history of point spreads that a number one seed is a 10-point home underdog.
That'd be an interesting question.
Really, who else when? You know what I mean?
That's worthy of some research, man. Let me put my Cracker Jack staff on it.
Me too.
Yeah, you're looking at him. But that's a really interesting question.
I got to believe. Yeah, but it's a weird dynamic with Boston. Mark Lawrence has an interesting stat. Number one seeds in game five are 79-25 straight up with only 10 losses by 10 points or more. But generally, the one seed isn't the worst team. it's a weird anomaly, right?
And there's another one. You know, you look at the Cavs, and you say, since LeBron's been back, they're 9-0 in these closeout games, straight up. My numbers show 6-2-1 or 7-2 ATS.
And think about that, Teddy. If you're Cleveland, you saw Irving go down the other day, and even I, for that split second, was like, oh God, there's the finals, it's over, like that's it again. And, you know, Cleveland's not going to say this because you don't want to jinx yourself publicly, but you want to get the hell out of here. You want to win this.
Cavs are winning this game.
You don't want to stretch. Every minute you're on the floor is another minute you can twist an ankle, pull a groin. God knows what can happen, Teddy. You want to get this out of the way, and you have 7 days for the finals to start next Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, watch the series price get adjusted if Cleveland doesn't win tonight. You know, we're already seeing the Warriors minus $3 against the Cavs.
I wanted to ask you about that. Was there an overreaction because everyone, oh, the Cavs suck, LeBron, oh, I told you. When they lost the game the other night, there was a little bit of a bump. Was that an overreaction?
Maybe. I mean, it's a really hard line to make, you know, in terms of a series price. I was trying to make numbers. I was all over the place. And obviously, it comes down to a point spread. And the way a series price is determined is you're going to take the projected point spread for every game.
Yeah, game one.
That,
yeah, the money whole line, game series, yeah.
And, yeah, and you just convert it out over seven games.
For the record, Teddy, bookmakers posted a 7.5 for game one. A fictional
seven and a half. 7.5, 225, and the series price is with Golden State minus $3. And I'm like, that's a little bit high for the, you know, for Cleveland. And then I'm like, but no, it isn't. Then, yes, it is. You know, I was like, should this line be? I was trying to think what the number would be, and I'm like, minus 180, minus 2,
yes,
minus 240. I didn't think it'd be minus $3, but I'm not going to argue against that number, and I'm sure they'll take plenty of Cleveland money as a result.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? It's funny because the fan in me, I'm more of a Golden State guy than a Cleveland guy. I've never been a big LeBron guy, but the better in me is like, dear God, I'm getting LeBron at plus 280 against a team that he just beat last year. And yeah, all right, they got Kevin Durant now. Okay. All right, let's see if it matters in the finals, right? Like,
yeah.
It's one of these deals. I still lean Warriors, but from a betting perspective, I can't lay minus 300.
Yeah, I mean, my general rule of thought looking at that series in a hypothetical fashion is I'm going to be taking points and not laying them in general for that series. But obviously, you know, when we talk about what happens tonight and how that could affect the series price. And one last point. What I was trying to say about the Cavs 9-0 straight up, 6-2-1 or 7-2 ATS in these closeout games, put Cleveland at minus 10 in those games, and they've covered twice. So it's not like they've been consistently blowing teams out in these closeout games. They've been good enough to win it, not good enough to win it by blowout margins over and over again.
We're heading into Memorial Day weekend, and the general managers around Major League Baseball and fans are starting to take the games more seriously right now. And, you know, the underachieving teams No one's hitting a panic button yet. You know, questions are starting to be asked. No more so than in Boston, Teddy. And we had Steve Lyons on, who's on Nesson now, yesterday. If there was a coach, a manager, and a team that needed to win some games this week, it was them. Farrell might have saved his job this week with this three-game win streak, as crazy as it sounds. But there's a hell of a big difference between being 24 and 21 and 22 and 23 or whatever, especially with the expectations in Boston. There's a lot of pressure on this guy, which leads me to tonight. They're getting the wins. Pomeranz's been a disaster. He got into it with Farrell. He doesn't like being taken out, like Lyons said. You know, is it Farrell's fault? You got mediocre pitchers giving up runs who are acting like they're Cy Young Award winners. He really hasn't fit into the stadium at all. I don't trust Pomeranz at minus 220, Teddy. You know, I know Texas, they were on a 10-game win streak, and I'm not saying that Nick Martinez is Roger Clemens, but, hey, number's a little high to me.
Well, you know, I'm interested in the total here more than the side.
Nine.
To be perfectly honest. I mean, there were 8.5s out there this morning. Most of those have been bought up. I'm trying to see if there's any. No, there's none available as we speak. You know, it's 9 across the board, but even 9 to the under. And no, it's not going to be a beautiful night in Boston tonight. It's not going to be one of these nights where the ball is going to be carrying. But, you know, in the hot, humid air, you talked about the issue with Pomeranz. Pomeranz, great fit for Petco. You know, yeah. Put him on the West Coast where he can get fly ball out, soft tossing lefties work at Petco. They don't work at Fenway. And you look at the home road splits this year and last, you know, Pomeranz, the struggles that he's had are likely to continue moving forward. And of course, you know, we're talking about a Texas team that has hit lefties reasonably well so far this season. They haven't been pounding them, but it's not a team that you're, no, I can't bet them against a southpaw hurler. You can. On the other end of the equation, I mean, Nick Martinez is who he is, and the Rangers bullpen behind him spotty this evening. I'm really looking. And, you know, Boston's only 3.5 games out of first place. It's not like they've fallen behind. And, you know, teams that panic and start firing managers, you know, contending teams that are firing managers and are 3.5 games out of first place in May, you know, that's even if they had lost these three games and were three games under 500 and 6.5 games out of first, it's not a scenario where if I'm the Red Sox, especially with Price still on the DL, you know, but I mean, they haven't had all their confidence together. And, you know, David Ortiz, while we like Boston's lineup up and down, they don't have that one big bopper. And I think it takes some adjustment for them. The offense has been hit or miss more than I thought it would be in early season play.
We got the Detroit Tigers and the Houston Astros. A little bit of a speed bump for the Astros right now. Teddy, we got about 2-3 minutes here. So we'll take a look at the Astros game tonight and the Cards and Dodgers. Justin Verlander's never lost before to the Astros. 4-0 in his career with a 2.05 earned run average. Fires on the hill for the Stros. Given up a league-high 17 bombs so far this year. Listen, the Astros couldn't continue to play 700 baseball on a daily basis for the remainder of the season. So I'm not surprised. Reality's catching up to him a little bit. But something that caught my eye here, Teddy, the Astros just 1-for-28 with runners in scoring position in this series.
Yeah, and Houston, as you mentioned, no team is going to win 70% of their games. No team's going to lose 70% of the games. When you have a squad that's struggling or a squad that's red hot, sometimes you wait for the flip, and then you can make money going the other way. I'm kicking myself because I liked Detroit last night. Didn't pull the trigger, unfortunately, from a service perspective, and they cashed a big underdog ticket there. I don't trust either of these pitchers. You know, I don't trust. You talk about Verlander's success against Houston, against current Astros, what 104 at bats? He has a 240 batting average against. Nothing dramatic there. And Verlander, he pitches so well at Comerica in Detroit on the highway. The advanced metric numbers show that he's regression waiting to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if the Astros hit him today. But you know, with fears, I mean, the guy's he defines the word, you know, gopher ball waiting to happen. And when you have a pitcher that is leading the majors in home runs allowed, and you're going against the Tigers, and the Tigers are hitting, and the Tigers are healthy, it'd be, you know, you can see Detroit trading runs with Houston all night long. And this one, another game that I like over the total.
Yeah, I think the Tigers could be a live small dog here. As far as, yeah, the over in the Rangers-Red Sox show, I'd bring up for you DFS players, Mike Napoli, 4 home runs in his last 7 ball games. All right, quickly on the way out here, Teddy. Cards and Dodgers. We cashed a ticket last night with Mike Leake. He's been unbelievable this year. Plus 135 dogs. The Dodgers, minus 150 favorites once again tonight. Waka waka on the hill for the Cardinals. Four straight no decisions. Good, not great. And Maeda returns. First time he's pitching in a couple of weeks. Line feels high. Total feels a little low. I got to go back to the well with the Cardinals as dogs again.
Yeah, I mean, Maeda's going to be on a pitch count tonight. You know, he only threw 60 pitches in his rehab start at AAA last week. You can count on him for maybe five innings if things go well. But, of course, that Dodgers bullpen's been really effective. You think this total's a little bit low? I think it might be a little bit high. You know, we haven't seen the Dodgers' bats come alive in this series. Waka's got nasty stuff. He doesn't always harness it well, but he's a tough guy to pitch. And Maeda, again, prior to going on the DL, he'd been pitching as well as he had all season his previous couple of starts. I wouldn't be surprised to see this one end up being a relatively low-scoring game compared to some of the contests we've seen at Dodger Stadium.
You can find Ted Savransky over at sportsmemo.com. He's one of the covers experts and, of course, his daily video over at SBR. You can find it on YouTube. Always a pleasure, Teddy.
Cheers. Have a great day.
There's Ted Savransky with his great stuff with Ted Savransky. We take a quick break. Scott Steiner joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi. I've told you guys time and time again, my favorite part of this gig is the opportunity to talk to my favorite athletes. And we're getting this opportunity right now, man. I've spent a lot of time watching this guy knock heads in a wrestling ring. And I was thinking about it. I had like flashbacks. I was like, man, I drank a lot of beers on those Monday nights, and it was a great era. And wrestling's like heavy metal, man. It never freaking dies. It's burning brightly. And it's burning brightly on the Fight Network and on Pop TV, of course, with Impact Wrestling. It's the Slammiversary on July the 2nd, and a man who's going to be participating in it, the legendary three-time world champion, Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner, joins us. Scott, welcome to the program, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, no, we're fired up to have you on the program. And, you know, three-time world champion and, you know, All-American with the Michigan Wolverines as well. How cool is that? I'm a diehard Michigan fan. I have been since the late 70s when I saw them get screwed over by USC in the Rose Bowl. I support all Michigan athletics. So I got to ask you, man, have you met Jim Harbaugh since he's taken over as a head coach?
Oh, yeah. I went to school with Jim, so I know Jim very well. I actually was roommates with a couple other football players, Jumbo Elliott, who played for the New York Giants.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Super Bowl there. So, yeah, no, then I came down when Jim came down to Georgia for one of his satellite camps, and I went and saw him. And then I'm going to take my boy up to go up to one of his football camps. So, no, I'm still, you know, wrestling, Michigan wrestling. And I go up to football games, so I'm going to go to a football game this year. So, yeah, I still follow Michigan. I love the University of Michigan.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Harbaugh's freaking intense, too. I figured he'd be a great wrestling manager, wouldn't he?
Oh, he'd be great at anything he does. He's awesome, man. He's turned Michigan around, and I can't wait for this year to see what happens in see what kind of changes, and then see whether the coach he pisses off next. It seems like he's always doing something different to push the envelope.
Exactly.
This year he went to Italy, you know, because they canceled the satellite camps. They made that against the NCAA rules. So, yeah, Jim pushes you know, people's buttons and, you know, pushes the envelope, and it's very entertaining to watch.
Did you have the same disdain when you wrestled against Ohio State Buckeyes, or was it Iowa? Iowa's got a great wrestling program. Which program did you get most fired up for to wrestle against?
Oh, it was definitely Iowa. Ohio State back then, that was usually, we beat those guys pretty handily. They weren't that great, even though they always have been a great wrestling state. Ohio State was a little bit behind on college wrestling, but no, when I was there, Gable was the coach at Iowa. So, yeah, they were always the toughest opponent, you know.
So,
but, you know, Big Ten is the biggest, you know. Like this year, most of the, like in the finals, they're repeats of the Big Ten finals. The Big Ten is the toughest conference there is in amateur wrestling.
Yeah, everybody gives the Big 12 all the love. Oh, Oklahoma State all the time and stuff. But, yeah, people underestimate the Big Ten. Great great wrestling program.
Well, yeah, it's Oklahoma State. It's one team. You know, there's like five top ten teams. Five of the top ten, or actually seven of the Big Ten teams are top ten. So it's hands down Big Ten's the toughest.
A lot of wrestlers now transition into mixed martial arts and the UFC, Bellator, et cetera. MMA really wasn't a thing when you were coming out of college. It was in its primitive day, so to speak. What do you think of mixed martial arts? And, you know, would have been something that you would have been interested in if there would have been real money there when you were coming out of Michigan?
Yeah, that's a tough way to make a living. But, if you look at all the champions are amateur wrestlers, you know, that's a natural transition for, I mean, because wrestling is the toughest sport there is. And as far as, you know, training and taking the next level, MMA, that's why they all do really good. So, yeah. But, yeah, it would have been a tough decision if it was a little bit bigger back then. But I'm a big fan of MMA.
You can never say never in the industry that you're in. So no door is ever permanently closed. But are you surprised to be back at Impact right now? And what led to this for you? You know, decide. You know what? I'm gonna side with Impact and kick some ass this summer.
Well, Jeff Jarrett took over again. That was one of the main reasons I went to the TNA in the first place. And then, you know, of course, then you know, douchebag Dixie Carter took over, and then that time for me to split. You know, and then when she's gone, you know, got rid of the baggage. I decided to come back. You know, and you know. There's nothing like punching another man in the face, you know.
Yeah, you've done a lot of that. You've done a lot of that over the years, man. You know, the WWE is the brand, but the WWE is it's almost like Toys R Us or something. You know, I get it. It's entertainment. But it's not, yeah, it's not like wrestling per se. It seems like there's a real appetite, Scott, for some like real wrestling and old school, you know, guys getting punched in the face and some badass. People want entertainment too, but they want some wrestling. It seems like the regional scene is really thriving right now.
Yeah, wrestling is always a part of Americana. And unfortunately, you know, WWE is run by two of the biggest douchebags there, Stephanie and Hunter. I don't know which one's a bigger douche, but you got a bunch of cookie cutter wrestlers go out there, and there's nothing against the wrestlers. They are forced into these positions to, you know, do whatever they have to do to survive. And of course, you know, you're going to do it no matter how stupid it is, because, you know, a lot of these guys, that's their lifelong dream. So, but unfortunately, you know, they got two big idiots, and they're, you know, look at the ratings. The ratings are horrible, but they keep on doing the same old shit.
So let me ask you about that, because people are asking me. They said, you got to ask him about Triple H. So you just called him a deuce. So your thoughts for Triple H, pretty clear. You can't get a bigger term than douchebag, right? What's your biggest issue with Triple H?
The biggest thing, he was, you know, the best thing he'd do is probably try to buy Wikipedia, because, you know, there's no secrets in the world today. And he needed to buy Wikipedia so people can't see what a pussy he really was, you know. And fortunately, when he came into professional wrestling, he wanted, you know, he's just an idiot, man. He's the biggest punk. And his idea of wrestling is horse shit. That's why it is. It's, I mean, it's hard to watch. You can't watch it, man. You got to take your brain out and try to watch the show. It's just stupid, you know?
Now, I got to be honest. Like, growing up, obviously, Hulk Hogan was a major force in professional wrestling. But I think he's a douche now, personally. I'll say it. I'm not down with the racist stuff. It's constant.
Go on. Let's see. I think it was the Daily Show where they did a spot where, you know, all people got, you know, if you really want to find out how somebody is, put them on a witness stand, and they put it on there and admit, Hulk Hogan says he had 10-inch cock, but Terry Bollea doesn't. He goes, far from it. Oh, my God, this guy's a freaking moron. But the truth came in about him. He's a racist, does a porn video and then collects off it. I mean, he's another guy with, no morals, no backbone.
That's what I'm saying. People say, Scott Steiner's a psycho. It's like, well, you're not rubbing lotion on your daughter's back. You're not banging your buddy's friends and filming it and then complaining about it after. You're not dropping racial F-bombs and these tirades on the phone. It's amazing, though, how the mainstream works. Ted DiBiase, great, best DiBiase story I ever heard. And I have a lot of respect for what he's become now. Talking to a drunk guy in a bar. He was talking about, God and Jesus and stuff. And a guy said, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus. And Ted said, how's that working out for you? And he walked out. He left the guy alone in the bar. You know Ted a long time. When I ask you about Ted DiBiase, what can you tell me?
We had a lot of good matches with him and Rotundo up there. But the best Hulk Hogan story that I saw firsthand was that Macho Man hated Hogan because, the breakup with him and Elizabeth. So one day, I used to ride with Macho Man all the time. I was good friends with him. He said, one day, man, I'm going to beat that guy's ass, but I got to, make sure it's right because Hogan's so political, he'll stab you in the back and try to get you fired, And but just what happened was at the Meadowlands, and the doors to the locker rooms not only have a door to the front, the doors are in the back, so you can go between locker rooms without going through the main hallway, And it just so happened that Hogan and Macho Man met in the doorway, and that was the time Macho Man decided, hey, shit's on, He dropped his bag, and he said, let's go, and Hogan being the that he is, tail went between his legs, turned around and walked away, so... Hogan's a punk, man.
There it is from the one and only Scott Steiner. So I wanted to ask you, I was going to ask you a name that I had to throw at you. And I hope that you don't hate this guy because I love that era and I love the NWO and that whole just the craziness of everything. But I'll ask you about Kevin Nash and Scott Hall.
Oh, shit. Kevin's from Detroit and I've known Kevin before he even got into wrestling, and Scott Hall is probably one of the best guys never to win a world title. And those guys, when they came down from the WWF, they changed the industry because they made people jumped up everybody's contract.
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody's that's the way it should have been. It's like, it's corporate world against the little guy. We had a fighting claw and try to get what we had to get. And Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they did it right, man. They stuck together and they actually helped, guys make more money. And, of course, that all went away when WCW, now these guys aren't making anything. There's three or four people making a lot of money, and all the other guys, they got to pay for their own insurance.
I got to tell you, Scott, we got to get out of here, unfortunately, but I once had an opportunity to get drunk with the Iron Sheik. I'd do anything to have a couple of beers with you, Kevin Nash, man, and Scott Hall sometime. I wish we had more time. You're welcome here anytime, man. We wish you the best of luck in your return to Impact. Go Blue, and thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us, Big Papa Pump. Scott Steiner.
All right, man. You can take care, brother.
Hey, there's Scott Steiner with us, man. We could have went on and on. We're getting the hook, though. Paul Bovey, you better pick a winner, Bovey, coming up next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. That was awesome, man. That was awesome. It was great, too. I asked, when I asked Scott Steiner, I asked him about Hulk Hogan. We talk about Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan is a racist douchebag. We talk about Hulk Hogan, And then ask him about someone else, but he went right back to Hulk Hogan. Another thing about Hulk Hogan, huh? It's like, Steiner doesn't like Hogan. I love really a lot of fun talking with Steiner. We had to go with Steiner. We got a couple of minutes left with Bovey. And I said on the way out with Steiner when we were getting the hook, Bovey better give us a winner today because that was pretty good stuff with Scott Steiner. But Bovey always gives us winners. What's going on, Paul?
Hey, I did okay on Saturday with those match races. I did, Gabe. I tweeted them out. We went 3-0, cloud computing over three horses, blew them away.
Nothing wrong with that. All right, so let's jump in here because we don't have a lot of time. Cavs and Celtics. I expect this to be the last game of the series, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. So really, to me, and I talked about this with Teddy earlier, the question is, does Cleveland pull away? You know, does Cleveland smash them again by 28? I don't think so. I think Boston shows some heart back on their home court. Getting double digits is pretty tempting, Paul, in my opinion. What's your take?
It's tempting, but heart will only take you so far. Clearly, the talent is with Cleveland. Kyrie Irving, after that sluggish start in game one, 33 of 48 from the field last three games. Kevin Love, 20 of 36 from beyond. And LeBron really hasn't stepped up in the last two games, and I expect him to do it here tonight. Cleveland wins comfortably, but I'm going over in the first half on Cavalier points. 57, I think they'll rack up 62.
57, 50. So you like the first half team total over Cleveland Cavaliers. I was going to ask you about the total here. You know, it was brutal. Bad beat, Paul. I can't buy a break lately. I had a bad beat the other night. I had an in-game 212.5. Freaking stuck, man. Stuck at 211. They scored 6 points in the last 3 minutes of that basketball game, despite the fact it was only a 10-11-point game in the final moments. Drove me crazy, man. You know, it's the biggest thing I hate about the NBA when guys don't shoot. Well, we're losing. Shoot the damn ball, man. It drives me crazy. But the total tonight, what do you make of this one at 216.5?
You know, it's going to come down to three-point shooting again, Gabe. Celtics were 8 of 27 in that game. They got blown out by 40 points. And, you know, then they have that 18 of 40 game, and they light it up. So how will they shoot tonight from beyond the arc? That's the $10 million question. And 216.5? I'd probably lean to the high side because the Cavaliers are definitely going to get their points.
What do you make, Paul, of the initial offering? Bookmaker, well-respected sports book, bookmaker has posted a Golden State Warriors -7.5, total 225 for a potential game one matchup between the Cavaliers and the Warriors.
I would think about that one. You know me about laying points.
I was thinking the total. You and I are pretty good at naming what the totals are going to be. 25 surprised me. I thought they'd come out with a 21 or a 22, to be honest, a 222. I'm a little bit surprised to see the 225.
Okay, which way will the public go? They're going to go to the high side. And look, this year, Golden State, you can argue, has more potency on offense with Durant. I don't think anybody would argue with that. And they lose a little bit on defense in the middle. So I think you could see more points this year than last. And I would say probably going to go to the high side.
That's a lot of freaking points, man. You know, for an NBA Finals game, 200, you got to get 226 points to win the bet. That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. And it's going to, again, come down to three-point shooting because these teams pump them out from beyond the arc. And Cleveland is capable of hitting 40% to 45% from beyond, and certainly Golden State can, and at home, all the more likely. So if they do that, I mean, is that number insurmountable? Absolutely not.
Cavaliers, 9-0 in elimination games since LeBron James has returned in his second stint. They've been very good at delivering that knockout punch. I would expect that they would, and I brought this up earlier. They don't want to risk any chance of injury. They don't need this going into the weekend. The NBA Finals start 1 week from tonight, buddy. I'm fired up for this. And, you know, we expect Cleveland to win tonight. It's almost going to be like the Super Bowl buildup. You know, the playoffs have been anticlimactic unless you were diehard like you or I, Paul. But the general mainstream are going to hop on board. And I think the hype leading up to next Thursday's game one will be the most hype like we've never seen ever in our lives before.
Absolutely, Gabe. The world is waiting for this. The NBA is sitting on pins and needles right now because the last thing they want to see is the Celtics in the finals. And it's not going to happen. But last game, 18-point lead, 17 points, about to put them on the cusp of a blowout, of an insurmountable lead. I think they got a little bit nervous, but everybody is waiting for these finals. It's going to be it's going to be great. I mean, everybody is looking forward to it. What can you say? The world is waiting for these NBA finals.
Yeah, first time ever we're going to have I'm getting a weird feedback. That's why I keep repeating myself. First time ever we'll have the same team meeting three times in a row in the NBA finals. Paul, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Paul Bovey with us. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, Cleveland gets it done tonight. And then there's the build-up. We got 1 week, NBA Finals. And then once the NBA – look, the NBA Finals start June 1. I expect them to go 6-7 games. I don't think it's going to be a quick series. That'll take us into late June or so because they're going to play games every five freaking days in the NBA Finals. And then, boom, man, it's going to be football season. We got a ton of fights coming up, too. We'll talk UFC on the program tomorrow, actually. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our plays of the day, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball. Time for our plays of the day. Let's start off in the National Basketball Association. We're going to take the Boston Celtics tonight. They got tattooed in the first two games on their home court. They've shown some resiliency. They've shown some heart. They've shown some pride. The Boston Celtic fans are very, very proud fan base. I expect Boston to represent tonight. They're actually a better team without Isaiah Thomas on the floor. Isaiah's a great scorer, but he's the worst defender in the NBA. Give me the Boston Celtics plus the 10 points. They're going to lose the game. The only question is, it's going to be close. Cleveland's going to pull away late. Do they pull away by more than 10? I'll take a chance that they don't. I'm also going to take a chance that this goes over. The games that stayed under here should have went over, and the games that went over could have stayed under. All the games are right around the number. I think it gets there over the number. I'm going to take a shot, man. You know, my inner voice tells me the Pittsburgh Penguins are probably going to win this game, but I can't pass up a team like the Ottawa Senators. They've been great to us throughout the playoffs. Give me the Ottawa Senators, plus 170. Give me the Texas Rangers, plus 175. Pomeran's been terrible. And give me the St. Louis Cardinals again. Last night we gave them to you at plus 35. We do it again. May the winners be yours.